Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to another outstanding episode of Interop Radio, Interop Live, coming to you once again live from what will be the expo floor at Interop 2015. Now, as we talked about this morning when on our show, you are liable to hear all sorts of interesting noises in the background, and those come to us courtesy of the show riggers, teamsters, and stagehands who are driving forklifts and tractor trailers and other things all around us here while we are under construction. But we're here in, well, an island of calm reflection in the studio at the Network Operations Center. And today I have two great guests with me in our first segment. One of these folks is someone you know very well if you listen to Interop Radio. We have Romy Mahajan with us. Romy, welcome to Interop Radio once again.
Thank you, and always a pleasure, Kurt.
We also have someone who typically is with us on Friday afternoons in the Information Week live program. We have Kelly Sheridan with us. Kelly Sheridan, an editor at Information Week. Kelly, welcome to Interop Radio.
Hey there, Kurt. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. Now, I want to start because today actually began Interop. We had the conference beginning. As a matter of fact, we had about three conferences beginning all at the same time. And I know, Kelly, that one of the people that you went to listen to was Chris Anderson, who is the co-founder and CEO, I believe it is, of 3D Robotics, one of the largest drone companies in North America. Romy, you told me you kind of popped in and out of that one. I know you have a lot going on, but Kelly, what was Chris talking about? How did that talk go?
Chris talked to us a lot today about drones and kind of how he got into that whole space. There was a lot of discussion about how he learned how to build his first drone and just kind of like the process of building 3D robotics, which was absolutely fascinating. We learned about how he collaborated with a teenager, I believe, who largely assisted him in developing what eventually became 3D robotics. And it was just amazing how the entire enterprise came to be and where he found all of his connections.
You know, I got to interview him before the show, and I read his most recent book, on makers. And to me, one of the fascinating things, as you mentioned, this partner that he found, someone who was a teenager from Tijuana, who, because Chris couldn't see him, all he knew was his work. The whole thing of age and any other consideration wasn't there. Romy, you and I were talking just before our show began about how important that can be to be able to offer all kinds of people opportunities, and from the flip side, because this isn't simply charity, to take advantage of the tremendous intelligence and creativity that is out there in communities that are typically not very well represented in the high-tech world.
I think technology in general has inherited sort of the cultural tradition of science and math, which was the idea of universal knowledge, and that it really didn't matter your creed, your race, your sex, your class composition, etc., in terms of your ability to actually make or create things of merit. In reality, however, technology institutions are human institutions. And where you inject humans, you inject biases. So this is a story of the beauty of ideas, and how they can actually float freely in the absence of those biases. However, I will caution us to say that the very fact that he had to tell that story is itself a problem, right? So we're in a kind of a strange, ironic world, and you can just see that Silicon Valley today is absolutely racked with stories of discrimination on gender, race, disability, and other lines. And so we've got a long, long way to go on this stuff still.
No question about that. I know here at Interop, in the Interop Net group, we have representation from a number of different cultural and geographical heritages. We have both men and women, although I have to say that the percentage of people from the different backgrounds and the different genders isn't nearly representative of where it sits in society as a whole. Kelly, I know that you are covering a lot of the Microsoft world. You deal with software and cloud stuff. So I'm not sure if this is an area where you have seen a lot of this kind of issue crop up. Is it something that tends to be present in your stories at all, or is it something that is perhaps something you're aware of but tends not to be core to your stories?
I would say the latter. It's definitely something that I'm aware of, not only in keeping an eye on technology, but just keeping an eye on the workplace in general. It's very obvious that the gender balance in IT definitely doesn't reflect the population of society as a whole, nor the population of the workforce, I believe. I remember in an article that I was recently writing on just strong companies for women who work in IT that women make up, I believe it's a little over half of the workforce, but only a quarter of IT jobs as a whole. So I think there's definitely some work to be done there. And there are quite a few companies, I have to say, that are working to improve women's efforts and get more women into the tech field.
Well, I was interested when I went to CES this year back in January to notice this tremendous divide, because in a lot of the traditional, not even IT companies, but let's call them technology companies, you look at the executives, you look at the salespeople, and it was very heavy male-centric, no question. When I went to the areas around robotics and wearable tech and Arduino, the maker areas, 3D printing, all of these things, all of a sudden, I would say it was much closer to a 50-50 female-male. And it wasn't that you had women there as spokesmodels or anything. The women were the engineers. The women were the owners. And Romy, I see you nodding your head. Is that something that you have noticed in this area?
Yeah, so let me riff on something Kelly said, right, which is when you talk about areas of work, of creation, of building things, well, you know, over 51% of consumers are female. And over 51% of makers are female, because every human being makes and consumes. And so the less rarefied you are from the core of making and consuming, you're going to have a better balance. Which actually brings me to an interesting full circle point. You talked about drones at the beginning, and now we're talking about people. And it's interesting because the drone discussion is largely around replacing people with things that machines can do. And so I actually find the whole drone discussion somewhat specious and somewhat scary for that reason, because technologies are supposed to be in the service of people, not to replace people and replace their livelihood. So I think that debate is one that has to happen with much more vocality and in a much more loud voice than it's going on right now.
Kelly, I'm looking at you, and I see you nodding along with what Romy is saying. You are based out of our New York bureau, and in that region, I know that there's the whole Silicon Alley and a lot of maker stuff that came out of Brooklyn and the other boroughs. What do you see, or is that a world that you are very aware of in that whole maker space and the more craft-oriented, more human-oriented technology firms and organizations?
Well, there's definitely a growing tech presence in New York. You know, we have definitely our fair share of startups and a lot of innovation going on in the tech space. I haven't heard or seen much in the way of drone technology in New York, but I think Romy makes a good point in that the discussion about drones replacing humans is something that really has to happen. You know, there's kind of a tension there because the humans are creating the exact things that could potentially replace them in the jobs that they're doing and the functions that they're performing in their everyday lives. And I think that's scary for a lot of people to address.
If I could just add something there, because it's a very interesting historical reference. We use the word Luddite to refer to people who we think of it as anti-technology. In fact, the Luddites were people in England at the Industrial Revolution who were simply against the labor-destroying advent of machines. They were not reflexive anti-technology people. So even the word choice we use reflects as positivism or technology, forgetting the fact that there's a sociological side to it as well.
You know, that's absolutely true. And to me, one of the fascinating things, I come out of a background of small business owners. My grandparents were small business owners. My mother owned a small business. And there was also a lot of hands-on work that went on. And I find it wonderful that we are getting back to an era where we value that notion of hands-on, small-scale, creative work. In England and in the UK, there's an old word, the crofting movement, that's typically applied to weaving and the fiber trades. But I think it really has a lot to do with what's going on. You know, people want to be expressive this way, and I love the idea that, and Chris Anderson talked about this in his book, that one thing that the internet has done is make that kind of small run. You know, if you want to create 10 of something, 100 of something, rather than a million, the internet has made that level of commerce economically viable. You know, you can support a family or an individual on that. You don't have to go immediately into the, can I make 10 million of these? And that has some interesting implications, I think, both from an economic and, as Romy said, a sociological standpoint.
I mean, technically you could say you could do a run of 10 or 5 or 7 or 17 or something and make money. And I think that if indeed the internet would have ushered in an era of economic democracy, we would have seen far different world than we do. In fact, while the internet has been around, and in fact the more it expands, the more polarization we're getting economically, and the Gini coefficient in societies is going up. So I think, again, the internet might make things possible. It's how we act on that possibility that makes the difference.
No question. And the actions matter. Kelly, I know you have written any number of things about the actions, and I'm curious, when you are out reporting, when you're hearing about all of the stories, are there any of these that have caught your attention? The idea, you tend to spend a lot of your professional time, I know, focused on some of the very largest companies we have, like Microsoft and Apple. But are there any of these smaller companies that catch your attention? Is there anything there that you find interesting?
In terms of startups or...
Startups or even ongoing, you know, you mentioned the New York area. There are a fair number of companies, and it ranges in from companies that make, you know, an individual part for something to, heaven help us, you know, the artisanal everything. I have actually seen artisanal computers, which strikes me as perhaps just, you know, about 5 degrees too precious for me, but still.
It's like organic spam.
Organic spam, that's right, that's right. So what do you think? And I also have to add, I've been in this business a long time. I've been doing this quite a while. You come at many of these things with fresher eyes than mine, so I value that perspective.
I think you made an interesting point in saying that the internet enables people to sell 5 of something or 10 of something. I know a lot of people who use the website Etsy to create crafts, and they can sell 5 or 10 of their products to, I mean, I've purchased stuff off that website that people have made, and I think it's cool that the internet can bring that kind of craftsmanship back through technology. In terms of other startups that do the same thing, I can't really think of any off the top of my head.
Can I just riff on that a little bit?
Please do.
Not so much the Etsy one, which I do like Etsy, and I believe they went public recently and are doing very well.
They did.
It's interesting to me that we're sitting here in Las Vegas, and that I have a colleague on my right who's from New York, because much of the mental frame and the mind share of technology is owned by what I call the Silicon Valley force field. right? It's like everything that is going on has to be B2C, social, has to have a few hundred million people on it. And we forget that actually some of the fastest growing parts of technology are B2B technologies, right?
Right.
In fact, take Microsoft, you know, one of their fastest growing areas is the server and tools area, which is mostly B2B. And so I think that if you look at the entire technology landscape, there are exciting things happening, sure, at the drone level and in the wearable level, but also just in standard, making standard corporate plumbing more efficient and more usable for the workers in large industries. And that's often neglected. So I think B2B, I think there should be a big wave of B2B type of journalism that comes out that isn't around that force field that emanates from Silicon Valley.
Well, as someone who doesn't live there, I agree with you. Down in the swamp, there's lots of interesting stuff going on.
Yeah,
and there are pockets of this all over the place. As you say, Silicon Valley is its own force field.
Yeah.
But generally, we will admit that, okay, there's probably some high-tech work going on around New York.
Yeah.
And some people will mention a couple of other places, maybe Austin,
yeah,
maybe the Research Triangle Park area. But once you get outside those, people tend to lose sight of the fact that there are little pockets of very creative, very viable work going on all over. And that gets very little attention in the general press.
And as the adage goes, right, an overnight success takes 10 years to build, right? I mean, most companies don't go from 0 to 60 in 2 seconds, right? They take a while, and you go through ups and downs and near-death experiences, and you end up in a few million, you know, a couple million dollars, make a bit of money, and those are equally innovative. They're just not as big and don't necessarily grow as fast. So I think we have to pay attention to those stories, and actually, as an entrepreneur myself, I learn more from those than I learn about the meteoric rise of certain companies like Instagram or whatever. So,
Romy, I'm going to ask you something because you have a way of looking at things that is, I find, tremendously valuable when I am considering things. I love your perspective. And this entrepreneurial idea, it seems to me that one of the things that we are guilty of is being very myopic about entrepreneurial spirit in North America. And when I talk to people from South and Central America, from South Asia, from Africa, these are some very entrepreneurial cultures. I mean, the spirit of going out and making a job where none existed is very strong. And it seems to me that when we talk about the universality of the internet, that conversation happens when we're talking about YouTube, but it seems not to follow through when we start talking about entrepreneurial ideas. Do you think that's a real problem?
I think it is. I think there's been a synonymization between technology and entrepreneurism. Entrepreneurialism is a culture. It's a way of being. It's a way you approach things. It's a gestalt, right? It has really nothing to do with the tools you use to get there. There are informal economies that still dominate the workforces in many, many countries. And as they say, necessity is the mother of invention. And so maybe in reality, where there's more necessity, there's more invention. That invention may not be the latest iPhone. It might be some very interesting way of harvesting water in low rain areas, or a very interesting way of protecting agricultural yields in the absence of, you know, MNC chemicals. And those stories aren't the ones we tell enough. To me, technology is simply a tool. It's not an end in itself. And we really need to stop equating all sort of innovation and entrepreneurialism with the next consumer technology. It's not good for the word, the language. It's not good for society, and it's not good for business either. So,
Kelly, what do you think about that? I see you nodding your head, but what's your perspective on this? Is it something that you've had a chance to do much thinking about so far?
It's not something that I've thought about much so far, but it's something that I'm going to think about now. I completely agree, and I think that's a great point, that technology is not inherent to the definition of neither entrepreneurialism nor innovation. Both of those things can happen in third world countries and areas around the world where there isn't an internet connection or there isn't advanced digital technology. And I think that's something that businesses and consumers need to keep in mind when you consider innovation or you consider the next big thing. It doesn't have to revolve around technology, and I think most people think that it does.
You know, that the whole notion of inherency is interesting because when you think about this category, Internet of Things, right? People concentrate on the internet piece. What about the things piece, right? It's things. It is physical stuff. In fact, there was a book written recently. I don't recall what it was called, but it was that 90% of world trade is still on goods, physical things that are carried in containers on ships, right? So we still, I think it was called stuff or something like that. So we live in a world of stuff, and now we're integrating the internet with the stuff and called it the Internet of Things. It's just more poetic to say Internet of Things than Internet of Stuff. But so even in much of the technology thing, we're really enhancing things, physical things. And I think that's, again, an object lesson for all of us who are in the ether all the time and really don't interact with physical things enough. So.
Yeah, it's in many ways, I remember, and Romy, I'm sure you do, back probably 15 years ago when Nicholas Negroponte first started talking, the founder of the MIT Media Lab, was talking a great deal about atoms versus bits.
Yeah.
And he was very big on the idea of building an economy based on bits, especially an international economy based on bits, because it costs essentially nothing to move a bit, whereas it costs real money to move atoms.
Yep. There's a drone flying above us as we
speak.
There it goes.
Yeah.
Ah.
Okay.
No,
that's a great point. And I do like the fact that you looked at me and said, I must remember. I think you're making an ageist comment here, Kurt.
I certainly
am. Because Kelly's so much younger and probably much more fresh than both of us. But yes, I do remember that.
I'm going to duck and weave and say it's just that I depend on your being such a well-read and cosmopolitan individual.
Why you're kind.
I do what I can here.
Yeah.
Well, we're coming to the end of this segment, and I want to thank both of my guests and ask, here at Interop, today is just day one. What sorts of things do you have planned for your stay at Interop? Kelly, why don't you go ahead? I know you've got some things you're going to be covering. What should we be on the lookout for from you?
Well, tomorrow I will specifically be covering different keynotes, I believe, from AstraZeneca and Royal Caribbean Cruises. And then for the rest of the week, I'll be sitting in on the information security track and reporting on the different news going on there.
Information security. I'm stunned that there's anything to talk about. I mean, aren't all our computers and networks perfectly secure?
Oh, you would think that by now, but no.
Oh, okay. Well, we will look forward to having you scare the daylights out of us for the rest of the week.
Kelly, I look forward to scaring my readers.
Kelly Sheridan, thank you so much for being with us.
Sure.
And Romy, how about you? What are you going to be doing for the rest of the week?
You know, I'm really thankful to be at Interop, and I got to sit in on the Information Week conference today earlier, but so I'm very thankful to UVM Tech for the opportunity to be here. I'm largely going to spend time meeting cool people and trying to learn, and hopefully every now and then get on my soapbox. But I really am very, very, very happy to be at a physical event here with other people with whom we all have affinity. So.
Well, we very much appreciate you taking some of that time to be with us.
Thank you so much.
There are my guests, Kelly Sheridan and Romy Mahajan. A great way to get the first day of Interop off to a great start. We'll be back with our second segment in just a few seconds. So stick with us. We'll be right back. Well, we're back here at Interop Radio, Interop Live from the Network Operations Center at Interop 2015. That was a great segment. I really had a good time with both my guests. Of course, Romy Mahajan is always a super guest to have on, and Kelly Sheridan is doing great work over at Information Week with all of her stuff. Now, want to let you know a little bit about what's going on. As I said at the beginning of the segment, we have a ton of construction work still going on here on what will be the expo floor. As I look out, I can see the banners hung that show us what the number of each aisle is. Pretty much all of the overhead banners for the different booths have been put into place. And what we have now are the crews building the booths. It's interesting, if you've never been around a big trade show, an expo floor like this, what they do is work from farthest away from the big overhead freight doors to closest to those doors. So on Thursday when we got here, they were doing the things that were closest to the entrance that all of the attendees will be using tomorrow. And as we've gone through the days, they've sort of worked in stages back towards the big freight doors. And for better or for worse, the Network Operations Center and therefore this studio are back close to those big freight doors. So we're making progress. As I look out earlier this morning, there were probably 10 large tractor trailers sitting just a few yards off to my left. Now all of the tractor trailers are out of here. The snorkel lifts and mobile platforms are, well, they are starting to move out. We still have plenty of forklifts going around, and those forklifts will be working all night long as everybody gets ready to put on an expo floor that we can use for all of the networking that's going to happen. You know, Romy mentioned as he was leaving that face-to-face networking in the sense of getting together with people who you want to talk with, people who you might want to do business with. You know, that's very important, and that is probably today the most important aspect of a conference or trade show like Interop. When I think about Interop, I think about a gathering of a tribe as much of anything else. This is a gathering of people who live in the tech world, more specifically live in the networking and big computing world. But when you talk to the attendees and the people who are working around the show, it's obvious that for many, many people here, this isn't just a job. This is something they're doing because they enjoy doing it. Now, it probably doesn't define them totally. I mean, these are very interesting, full people. But working with networks, making communications happen, that's something that really kind of turns them on. And it's fun to be around people who are doing something as their business that they enjoy doing. So we have a lot more to come here at Interop Radio. We're going to be here all week long. Tomorrow, Tuesday, we have a show at 11 a.m. Pacific and 4 p.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern. We're on that same schedule on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, we're 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. Pacific. We hope that you will be with us for all of these shows. In addition, we hope that you will be following the Interop Twitter feed. Lots going on there. There's an active Interop Instagram feed. We have stories from Interop that are going to be appearing on informationweek.com, on networkcomputing.com, and on darkreading.com. Check each of those sites every day to see the latest in what's happening here at Interop 2015. Well, I've got to go out and find some more stories to tell because there are sure a bunch of them. I'll be back here tomorrow at 11 a.m. Pacific time. I hope that you'll be with us as well. Until then, I'm Kurt Franklin for Interop Radio saying thanks so much for being with us. Hey, we'll see you tomorrow morning, Pacific time.